Hey all, it's the No Nay Never podcast with your host, Jamie Smith.
Hello and welcome to this week's No Nay Never podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Smith, and joining me today are James and Liam. Two games to go through, two draws, a 3-0 draw at Newcastle and a 1-0 draw at home to Spurs in the FA Cup, which is possibly not the result we're looking for, but we'll come on to that later. We'll start with Newcastle, and it was another fantastic fight back from Burnley. Three times we went behind, three times we fought back to get a point under extremely difficult circumstances with three substitutions needed in the first half due to injuries. James, that result just shows the character and the fight that we've got in this group, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think to get a point out of that when, and arguably, we could have got more. You know, when you lose three players in the first 35 minutes, that shows a great fighting spirit, particularly when obviously two of them were as important as Jason Shackle and Dean Marnie.
It's difficult to understate, really, just how tough the circumstances were, I think. Especially, as you say, Shackle goes off in the first 15 minutes, Marnie becomes captain and he goes off, Kevin Long comes on and he's stretched off. It's so difficult to stand up to that sort of difficult situation, but the second half I thought were absolutely outstanding. Like you say, we could have won the game. We hit the post four times, which is ridiculous. I think it's 10 times this season now, and you just wonder what might have been different if some of those chances had gone in. I mean, Barnes hit the post in the very first minute of the game. It's one of those where we'll take a 3-0 after being behind three times, but would we perhaps look back at it as one that we had the chances to win, do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, arguably whenever you do hit the woodwork that many times, you do look at it and think it could have ended differently. But I think, to be honest, when you look at what happened in the game, we have to be thankful that we came away with something rather than nothing.
It was an incredible game to watch. I was at St James's Park and just about got my breath back from all the stares by the time the goals started going in. But the first half, we weren't really at the race, I felt, and that was maybe due to all the injuries. I think that obviously played a factor, but we were probably a little fortunate to go in 2-1, especially with the own goal. But after the break, there was a lot of talk at half time about damage limitation and bringing players off to avoid them, not bringing players off but trying to avoid injuries and stuff, and for Shouldash to manage to coax that sort of performance out of his team, I think it just shows what a superb manager we've got, really, and hopefully we'll be able to hang on to him. Liam, welcome to the podcast, first of all. It's your first appearance on the podcast. Newcastle away, really fantastic point for us, but it's just the latest in a series of very good performances in the league, even though we haven't been winning, isn't it?
Yeah, I do believe that the game in general, I thought that to get a point out of it, I do believe that is a very good point, especially from the recent form of Newcastle in general. Especially if I'm managing to get a win against Chelsea. I believe that a point, especially in the circumstances of getting the three injuries in first half, of course that wouldn't help. Well, using our three subs, which usually with Sean Dyche, he's not really one to use his subs, especially like that circumstance. But I do believe that a point is very well for the Newcastle game.
Do you think maybe a couple... Dean Marnie was ill, wasn't he? He was fine for the Spurs game, but the Shackle injury was apparently some sort of minor calf strain. Do you think maybe the number of games that the players have played over Christmas has contributed to those, or is it just one of those things? And it's difficult for us to tell, I suppose, and Kevin Long in particular is just extremely unlucky with the ACL injury it seems he's picked up.
I mean, I've been honestly shocked with the last few games, that especially with the Christmas period, that we're using so many players consistently throughout, which it does really show that how well the fitness team, and especially we've got to give a lot of credit to the staff back, that they, using that sort of, just it's sort of weird that using so many players, especially as Christmas break comes on, it is much great credit to the staff, but to the actual players themselves, I just believe it's just one of those things that, especially with three players at one game, I believe it's just a bit unfortunate, especially for Kevin Long in particular, as he hasn't really had his shouts this season.
Do feel particularly bad for Long. I mean, he's waited until now to get his first taste of Premier League action, and 10 minutes later he's been stretched off, and that's probably the end of his season. But it did come out that he's signed a new contract, so he's got a 2-year extension. He's got plenty of time to get back to full fitness, and hopefully we'll see him back sooner rather than later, although it is a long way back from an injury like that one. Sticking with the Newcastle game for now before we move on, I thought Michael Keane, again, was absolutely outstanding. We've talked about Keane quite a lot in the podcast in the last few weeks, but in those circumstances where Shackle's gone off injured, Long's gone off injured, Stephen Reid's playing right back, Trippier's playing left back, and Ben Mee's moved across, for us to defend so well, apart from one little brain fault when we got caught out for Sissoko's goal, I think that just shows a sign. That's a sign for me of how important Michael Keane has become in the last few weeks, and I think the talks are still ongoing regarding whether we can keep him for the rest of the season. But Newcastle for me was a real sign of how vital Keane has been. James, I don't know how much new there is to say on Keane after last week's podcast, but it's weird how he's gone from playing not at all to suddenly being, for me, one of our most important players.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, obviously he's played exceptionally well, and we've said that on the podcast before. You know, I'm sure we're trying to get something done to keep him at the club for the rest of the season.
Well, hopefully there'll be news on that sooner rather than later. I think the fact that he did play in the Spurs game is a good sign. I think that shows that United don't mind that he wanted to, that he'd be cup tied, so maybe that's an indication we're going to be able to keep him. I think a permanent deal for Keane would be absolutely tremendous if we could get one done. I wrote a piece on site this week saying just that, saying that it'd be an investment, and even if he costs 2-3 million, I think that's money that we probably would get back, because he looks like a very classy and promising young player. Liam, what have you made of Michael Keane so far?
Michael Keane is, especially for the January, we have to keep on to him, especially that with the connections and links he's been putting up with the team, especially for the game last night. In fact, he played a vital role in that, but of course we'll get onto that later. But yeah, I mean, I was surprised at the start of the season that he didn't really get that many chances, especially, I guess it's just because, you know, letting Duffel, let his shout, you know, letting him have his goal in Premier League. But yeah, I've been very impressed by him so far. Looks like a very young prospect. But yeah, they're very happy with him so far, and hopefully we can manage to keep on to him to at least the end of the season.
The thing that impresses me most about Keane is just his confidence. He seems happy to take players on, and he's happy to bring the ball out from the back, and he'll play passes. He seems to have, we've talked on the podcast before about his distribution being better than Duff's, but I think his all-round play is, he's got that sheen of someone who's come through the ranks at a really big club, and I think you can tell that he's got Manchester United pedigree, and hopefully they'll be willing to let him stay, because I think he's going to be absolutely vital. Shackle is apparently going to be okay for QPR at the weekend. We'll talk about QPR later in the podcast, but Michael Duff is on the way back as well. It's probably going to be a bit of a decision for Dash, really. Duff did okay earlier in the season, but I felt he was starting to fade a little bit when he got injured. Keane's been playing so well, arguably the future of the club. James, what would your thoughts be about that decision that Dash is going to have to make, assuming that we can keep Keane?
Oh, you know, I think you've got to look at the younger guy and the way he's been playing. He's not going to lose his spot anytime soon, is he?
Well, Duff didn't do that much wrong to lose his place, and with him being such a reliable performer over the years, I think there would be people saying that he should come back in.
Maybe people would say that, but there's not really room for sentiment in the Premier League. You know, he has been a great player for the club, but at the end of the day, he's been out for whatever reason. The guy who stepped in has done a great job, and I think we should stick with what's working for us right now.
Ben Mee's filled in at centre-back for the last two games, but with Kevin Long probably being out for the season, although no time frame's been put on his injury yet, does that mean we are a little bit short at the back? Even if we keep Keane, it means that we're down to three specialist centre-backs, really, if Ben Mee's going to be viewed as more of a left-back.
I think Ben Mee's viewed as more of a left-back. But for whatever reason, I'm not sure, but I think, obviously, for the rest of the season, he's going to be third in line for centre-back, unless we bring someone else in January.
I think Mee can cover the left side of defence, I think, because he's quite strongly left-sided, so he's a reasonable understudy for Shackle, I think, but Keane and Duff are probably the only two that could play on the other side. Hopefully, Shackle and Keane are the partnership that we'll see more often than not, because I think that is comfortably our best partnership. Liam, we'll come on to the Spurs game in a bit more detail in a little while, but how do you think Ben Mee's done at centre-back in the last couple of games, having to fill in?
Ben Mee. I mean, he's not exactly that bad as a centre back in general. I do believe that if worst comes to worst and Keane does go in this January transfer window, that it wouldn't be the end of the world, but it wouldn't be too great either, because like I don't know when Ward is coming back, but of course when we've seen him, maybe he was great as a left back position. But I do believe that it will be definitely not as good as what the Keane and Shaka partnership is right now. But I do believe it will be a great loss. And with me in general, I think he's been pretty good as centre back. He hasn't done too much wrong. But yeah, hopefully you don't have to come to that stage.
It's a funny one, me, because he was touted as a centre back when he arrived at Turf Moor and played the friendlies when he first came as a centre back, and he looked really good. I remember one game against Sunderland, I think, at Turf Moor, where he looked really classy. But I just worry if he's not quite big enough to play centre back, especially in the top level. I think he's 5'11", which is not small by any means, but most top flight defenders seem to be well over 6 foot. And against the really big, powerful strikers, you wonder if Mee's physicality would be quite up to that. One other thing I want to touch on the Newcastle game was George Boyd again. I thought was fantastic. He's really come into some solid form, scored another goal that was back-to-back league goals that he scored in. And I've been a little bit frustrated with Boyd in the past about his lack of end products. I didn't feel like he was affecting results enough in the final third, so I'm really pleased that he's added a couple of goals, and now he's got 4 goals. He's pushing Ings and Barnes close as top scorer. I think, is it fair to say, James, that Boyd has added a little bit more than running to his game in the last few weeks?
Yeah, I think, you know, if he's grabbed a couple of goals, probably is safe to say that. I think he's been a good player all round. You know, he's running, he's probably the standout aspect of his game, but at the same time, obviously, he's now turned up with a few goals, and he's had a few chances as well where you thought maybe on another day he's put it in. I think he's hit the bar once or twice. And, you know, with a little bit more luck, he's probably got 4 or 5 rather than what he's on now.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think he has been a little bit unlucky at times, but he seems to be full of confidence at the moment. I think that's maybe where these goals have come from. Obviously, the goal at City had a bit of luck with him being offside, but it was an important touch that took it past Hart. And his goal at Newcastle, I thought, was really well taken. There wasn't much on when he picked the ball up on the edge of the box, but he drove into the area. And although first viewing, I thought Anik probably should have done better with it. It was a really good hit and picked out the bottom corner across the goalkeeper. They're always quite hard to stop, so hopefully we'll be able to keep that up, because I think if we've got another goal threat in the side, that makes a big difference and takes some of the pressure off of Ings and Barnes. Moving on to the Spurs game in the Cup then on Monday night. Strange decision to have it on Monday night, by the way, but we can talk about that as well. Quite a low crowd at Turf Moor, and a funny game really. The first half was a non-event, and then the second half it livened up a little bit when Harry Kane came on. Liam, 1-1 was probably a fair result, wasn't it?
I don't believe there wasn't really many highlights for the game, of course, and 1-1 is somewhat of a fair result. We did come back into the game, especially once Volks came on, but of course, we got more to speak about Volks later, of course, but I do believe that 1-1, it isn't, yeah, I think 1-1 is more of a fair result, to be honest. Tottenham both had the same amount of shots on target, and the shots in general, possession-wise, we wasn't really massively dominated. In first half, it was more just battle of the midfield, I believe. But yeah, I do believe 1-1 was probably not that. It's not the worst that we could get, but I believe it's probably a good result.
In isolation, getting a draw against Spurs, I think, is an excellent result, especially considering they'd beaten Chelsea 5-3 the weekend before. So I think that's a good sign. Whether or not we really wanted to have to play a replay next week is probably another question. James, the first half, neither side had a shot at all. I think the Turf Moor press box would have been packed with journalists trying to think of things to say. We were certainly doing that on the No Name Ever live blog. Have you ever heard of that happening before? I was racking my brains trying to think of an occasion where neither side has even had a go in the first half.
I can't think of an actual game that springs to mind immediately. I'm sure there has been games that have been utterly devoid of chances, at least for a while. I mean, particularly back in our days, languishing sort of mid to bottom half of the Championship.
The Steve Cottrell era, yeah. There were some pretty terrible games back then.
Particularly when the pitch was bad as well, because it wasn't maybe a case of teams not wanting to have a go, they couldn't get to the penalty area to have a go. Such was the way when our nematodes got involved on the in the routes. It's a strange one, because I would have thought, to be honest, that both teams would want to try and just score as many goals as they can, and just try and get the tie out of the way, because a replay really isn't any use for anyone.
It was a strange one. I mean, I agree with you. I don't think a replay was at all ideal. I mean, it's going to fall in the middle of the QPR and Palace games at the Turf, which we wouldn't have wanted. We'd have wanted a clear run at the Palace game. We don't really want to go to London, I don't think, for a replay. And Spurs have got the League Cup semi-final coming up to worry about as well. So the last thing they'd have wanted was another cup tie. I was a bit surprised by the strength of the teams, really. I mean, considering the number of games all those players will have played recently, we only made two changes. One of those was enforced with Shackle being injured. And Spurs didn't make that many changes either. I think they changed the goalkeeper and a couple of players, but most of their most important players were still in there. Liam, when you saw the teams, were you a bit surprised that there weren't more rotation as well? Sean Dyche had said he was going to make changes, and he only made two in the end.
Well, I do believe it wasn't really necessary to have a full-strength team out, especially in this game. Neither same thing for Tottenham, to be honest, especially after such a win they want, especially with the League Cup games coming up soon. I don't believe it's really necessary. I would have enjoyed seeing Volk starting, of course, after him coming back. I would like to see Danny Ings and Volk having a nice sort of run out, having quite a few minutes, at least a half in general, but I don't think it was really necessary, as, of course, it showed that there were no shots in first half. But yeah, kind of surprising, especially for it just being third round. The last thing that Billy needs is, I mean, a couple would be nice, but we do mainly just got to focus on the league, especially for this season.
You mentioned Volks there. It's fair to say his arrival changed the game, wasn't it? And it was good to see that there was immediate signs of the link-up play with Danny Ings that was so good to watch last season. It seems like they've picked up where they left off, really.
Well, yeah, I do believe that when Volks came on, that I believe that as we were 1-0 down, we needed some life being brought back into the game. And since then, we didn't really have many opportunities. They were one decent chance by Danny Ings, which was on target, which was our first actual shot on game, I believe, which was, pretty nice to see. But it's very nice to see Danny Ings and Volks coming back in. Volks and Ings, it just seems like the classic Burnley from last season, which we all loved watching. And it did seem a bit weird without Volks, especially from what he did last season. But yeah, I do believe that, especially with Volks scoring. I probably would have betted on Volks scoring, to be honest. I thought it just would have been written in stars, to be honest. But yeah, very nice off Volks here, and hopefully enjoying him playing more games for us in the future.
I think you could see in some of the pictures the joy on the faces of the players. It seemed like it really meant a lot to everyone to have Volks back in the team and doing well. So perhaps the replay will be a good opportunity for him to get that first start and really push for a place inside, although I think with the way Ings and Barnes have been playing, he might have to wait a little while until he can start a league game. Towards the end of the game, Liam, I was a bit surprised that Ings and Boyd, I think, came off, didn't they? It seemed to me like we were settling for the draw, even though it isn't really ideal for us to have that replay. How did you feel about those substitutions?
Well, I believe I was mainly surprised about Boyd being put off. I mean, I believe that Ings did actually pick up a knock before he was sent off. I mean, before he was took off by Dyche. I believe he did get a bit of a knock running into the box. He did get put down a bit. But I believe that was probably a tactical decision of Dyche and Boyd. I was kind of surprised to see him off, as I believe that Kitely in the game, he didn't... I mean, of course, from the start game, he played very well. Everyone was surprised that he didn't start the next game, but he kept on struggling to take on the man, which I realised that he kept on trying back, and he either just failed, got the ball took from him, or he just ended up just turning back and giving it to Trips or Marnie, which seemed to be okay. So kind of surprised that Boyd went off. I believe Dyche, believe Ings were more of a tactical decision, as he did pick up a knock. But yeah, I mean, the draw isn't ideal, getting a replay, but I guess this is what you got to deal with. It's Dyche at the end of the day, and hopefully he makes a good decision on that one.
It's interesting what you say about Kitely, actually, because a lot of people say how well he played at Newcastle, and I didn't really think that was the case. I didn't agree at all. I felt like he'd lost the ball a lot there as well. But he did come up with the cross for Danny Ings' goal, and it was tightly set up votes for his goal as well. So even when it doesn't seem like he's playing that well, he does seem to affect the game. James, we mentioned Kightley before, but he probably was unlucky to lose his place, wasn't he? And maybe the injury, the illness to Marnie, and we assume Jones is going to be okay. Does that maybe open up a spot for him to come back in?
Yeah, well, I thought, to be honest, first time round he was unlucky to lose his spot. You know, he was pretty key to the goals at Stoke. And I think if you look at his work rate, it's always great. Much like Boyd, really, to be honest. And again, he was probably someone who last season we looked at and he did a lot of running, a lot of hard work, but we weren't necessarily getting as much end product as we expected. But he did start scoring a few towards the end of the season, and you were thinking that maybe that would be, you know, good coming into this season, but obviously he had a bit of injury trouble in pre-season. And as a result, he's not really got a proper run in the side. But, you know, there's options there at the moment. And to be honest, it depends on what you want to do with Scott Arfield. And obviously, I think that comes down to whether Dean Marnie's fit or not. So I think we'll have to wait and see on that.
Yeah, well, I was surprised Marnie played in the Spurs game just because I'd assumed he'd be given a chance to recover. But if he started that game, I think we've got to assume he was back to 100% fit. It was a vomiting bug, apparently, and they can be gone in 24 hours, can't they?
Yeah, so I mean, if it's that kind of thing, it was probably maybe not the best idea to play him at Newcastle, to be honest, because you wonder if he's maybe given that to someone else. But if no one started getting it yet, you think you're probably okay.
Yeah, well, as far as I'm aware, there's been no word on Jones. I think we're all assuming that he was just rested, but I suppose it's possible he's picked up that bug from Dean Marnie. They do play very close to each other in the middle of the park, so might have been some swapping of fluids that's led to Jonah coming downhill. That's probably not an image that we should be putting out on the podcast. The draw for the fourth round was actually made before our game. I think the players were probably a little bit let out because they were waiting to see who they were going to get, and it's another uninspiring one, I think. A home draw is always good, but it's Leicester City at home in the next round. It's not the sort of game that anyone's going to get excited about, is it really? And Liam, it was a low crowd at Turf Moor that we've not really touched on, probably because of being moved to Monday night as well. But Leicester City at home, another old Premier League game. It's not the best draw, is it? What do you make of that draw?
The draw wasn't particularly great for us, to be honest. I mean, with Leicester, I do believe that in that game we were basically put out of form. I don't know why. I do feel like we put out a pretty strong squad for that game, just for the fact that it's Leicester and that both battling for relegation or surviving relegation. But it's gonna be an interesting game, especially with the turnout as well. I mean, to be honest, I was surprised about the Tottenham game. In fact, I don't know why, but I felt like it was gonna be, you know, a pretty high turnout. I was watching a few things off like BBC and things like that after the game, and I don't know why, but they kept on mentioning about, like, particularly the Jimmy McElroy stand saying that, oh yeah, there's no fans, low turnout, yeah, like, you know, completely empty, just like, well, it was turned down. So I don't know why they kept on mentioning that, but I was sort of let down of the low turnout, to be honest. I mean, I do believe that James Hargreaves is pretty full, pretty decently full, to be honest. So, but yeah, Leicester, not really looking forward to that game, especially that I believe we should focus more on the Premier League, to be honest.
Yeah, there were just shy of 10,000 inside Turf Moor, but a quarter of those people were Spurs fans. So there was about 7,000 Burnley fans decided to go out. And yeah, it's strange to see it so low in a way, because Burnley Spurs should be an enticing cup tie. There was a lot made of the fact that it was the 1962 FA Cup final, and the club did a special programme to commemorate that and stuff. But I think as soon as they moved it to Monday night, I think it was inevitable it was going to be a low crowd. I think Spurs paid for their fans' travel, which is a good gesture, but it didn't really feel like the supporters were being taken into account, in my opinion, when it was moved to a Monday night. So I don't think the club can really complain that they got a low attendance as a result, even though I felt £20 for tickets is fairly reasonable, really. The last point on the Spurs game that I wanted to make before we move on was on Scott Arfield, actually. James just mentioned he played in central midfield in the Spurs game, and we've had this one a few times, me and James, about whether he is a central midfielder or not. Liam, you were at the Turf. How do you think he did in there alongside Dean Marnie?
I do believe that Arfield isn't. I do believe he's probably better at the right-hand side than he is down in the middle, just from what I've seen. It seems that he just seems to get lost a bit. I don't know if it's just me, but when I watch the game, it just seems to end up losing wherever he is, which I've been seeing that a lot, especially in the last few games, especially against the likes of Man City, which is understandable. But I do believe that Arfield is probably better at the side. I'm sort of mixed opinions about Arfield because at the start of the season with the Chelsea game, it was all hyped up and he was actually doing really well. He was confident, and now it just seems like he's just lost that. Perhaps from the Crystal Palace game and he missed a penalty. But yeah, I believe that Marnie and Jones' partnership, without that, it's sort of been lost a bit.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to judge Arfield as central midfield just because we've barely seen it in the last couple of years, but he has had good games in there. I was impressed with him at Leicester, especially with that being another patch-up team he played in there with Stephen Ward, and he did really well. But yeah, I see what you mean about, you know, getting lost. When he plays central midfield, I do think he's got a tendency to get caught ahead of the ball when he really needs to be behind it, and I think obviously Marnie and Jones is our strongest combination in there, so it's no wonder that the right has become his best position. But James, that versatility is important to have throughout the squad, isn't it? And it's especially with Chalobah going back to Chelsea, having Arfield able to play central midfield is going to be important in the next couple of months.
Yeah, well, I think that's always been the key to Sean Dyche's squad, that I don't think there's anyone who can only put one position in there. With Scott Arfield's original position being central midfield, it's always possible to put him back into the role he's used to.
Especially when we're quite strong out wide as well, aren't they? Carrickley can come in, Wallace can come in. It doesn't weaken us that much if Arfield plays inside and somebody else comes into the side. I think that's a really good option.
Yeah, we've got plenty of what you probably call true wingers, because I'd say Arfield's not really a true winger. Even when he plays there, he offers a lot, but I don't think he's playing there for his wing skill. I think there's something else he brings that I think helps you balance it up if you're playing like a true winger on the other side. But, obviously we've got Boyd, Cartley and Wallace who are all capable of playing the wings. So, there's the space there to have Arfield play in the middle instead.
Yeah, I think in football manager parlance, I think you'd probably have Arfield as a wide midfielder, and then Boyd, Wallace and Cartley would probably all be down as wingers. But I think the balance is important, isn't it? Obviously the work rate is really important, and that's probably what Dash wants first and foremost from his wingers. That's why we've seen Boyd smashing all these records for ground covered, but Arfield provides that. But I do want to see him have a bit more of a goal threat. He's got 9 goals last season and he's only got 1 this year against Chelsea. I think he does need to get into a few more goal scoring positions, because he did start the season really well, but he has tailed off probably in the last couple of months. I think Liam's right. I think the penalty at Palace was a bit of a turning point. I think if he scores that, then he keeps his confidence up, but maybe he's just being affected a little bit by that. Only time will tell, I suppose, but I'm sure Arfield will find some form again before the end of the season. Looking ahead then to the weekend game against QPR, obviously it's going to be an absolutely massive game at Turf Moor. I still think it's too early in the season to call matches 6-pointers, but it's inevitable this one's going to be called a 6-pointer. QPR have got no points away from home all season, and Charlie Austin will of course be coming back to Turf Moor. James, what do you make of this one? It's going to be hard to call, isn't it? But Burnley really need to get a win.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really key game. This is definitely a 6-pointer. I think they would be really disappointed with what happened at Loftus Road. It was a game that we should have at least made close, rather than getting beaten the style we did. But I think it's really key that we get a win against QPR. And, obviously, hopefully keep Charlie Austin quiet.
I think it's probably a good thing in a way that it is quite soon after the game at Loftus Road, because I think that will be fresh in the minds of the players that we did give such a disappointing performance there. I think that was probably in the top three most disappointing performances of the season, along with West Brom and maybe another one that you could throw in there. But yeah, it just didn't really seem like we were at the races that day, and QPR really dominated us. But their home form has been pretty good. Like I say, they've got nothing at all away from home, and they lost 3-0 to League One Sheffield United with quite a strong team at the weekend in the FA Cup. Liam, what's your assessment of Saturday's game? It's a bit make or break these next few matches, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's, if there's any turning point in a season, I believe it's going to be these next few games. The QPR game, massive, massive game, of course. But I think every single game, if you follow, you know, the Daesh philosophy that take each game at a time. And I believe that we probably should do that, not get ahead of ourselves. That with a QPR game, especially with the 3-0 loss to Sheffield United, it was a shock, to be honest, especially as it was at Loftus Road. Perhaps it was more a tactical thing if they... You know, of course, it's, you know, I don't know about that. Kind of a shock, to be honest. But yeah, this QPR game, I'm not looking forward to it, to be honest, guys. It's going to be a very, very suspenseful game. I believe there's not going to be many goals in it. That's just my opinion. I believe it's only going to be either 2 goals maximum. I believe it's going to be a 1-0 win to either team, to be honest. Whoever scores first will win the game. That's my prediction for that.
I think you're right. I think these games between teams at the bottom can be very tight and teams aren't trying to make mistakes. QPR, a lot of the time this season, have played one up front, and we know Charlie Austin isn't really ideally suited to play in that role. He's got a lot of ground to cover when he plays up front, and you really need to get players around him so that he can then exploit the space. If he's having to do all that on his own, you're not getting the best from him, basically. So it'll be interesting to see if they do that or if they try and match up with our 4-4-2. Hopefully Shaka will be fit, hopefully Marnie and Jones will be fit and should be back to something approaching full strength with, I would imagine, Volks still on the bench for now, even though he did score at the weekend. QPR's away form, it's almost an anomaly, really. I can't think of anyone who's been so strong at home and so bad away. The comparison is obvious to us last time we were in the Premier League, but they've been even worse. I don't know how much you've seen of QPR this season, James, but it's a stark contrast, isn't it? They haven't even looked like getting anything away. They've got hammered more often than not.
Yeah, no, I think, to be honest as well, they've not really looked like getting anything when Charlie Austin hasn't turned up. So they're pretty much the same side as last year, to be honest, then, aren't they?
Yeah, that's true. I think Leroy Firth played well at Loftus Road and he was a new arrival, but yeah, it's mostly the same as last season. I think Redknapp will be tempted to go 4-4-2, I think, just because Zamora caused so many problems for us at their place in the air, and I think the temptation to do that again and get Fur into the left channel and cause problems for Kieran Trippier as he did, I think that's going to be really tempting. But I think it's a good opportunity for us. I don't think we should be frightened by it. Last season we were better than QPR, I think, despite their league position and despite the result there, I think we're certainly as good as them this season. I think these home games in the next month, I think, can be really crucial, and the pressure's on. I mean, we've been playing well, not winning games, we're 19th in the league, we've got to win these matches, otherwise I think it's going to start slipping away from us. The transfer window is open as well. We should talk about that briefly before we round off for this week's podcast. Shalabar has already gone back to Chelsea. I suppose that was nothing of a surprise, really. We're hopeful and expecting Michael Keane to stay for the rest of the season, but as you'd expect with Sean Dyche, he plays his cards close to his chest. We haven't heard too much about others, although I think it was reported that we are working on a couple of deals. There's a few areas of the squad we should probably be looking at. Liam, what do you think the big priorities are for us to do in this transfer window?
I believe that with the squad, probably, I believe that our strike force, it isn't too bad, of course, with Barnes and Ings, especially now with Volks coming back. You've got the likes of Sordo and Jukovic, which, to be honest, both of them, it just feels like... I do feel bad for Duke, as he hasn't really been that bad. He just can't really seem to score. But strikers, I think, we're not that bad on. I believe that we need a pacey guy. We need some more pace in the squad, perhaps down the wings. For our field, I don't think we should take out Boyd. That'd probably be a bit unfair for him. Perhaps on the right side, or either side, to be honest. I think Boyd can play on both, actually. But, yeah, I think we need some pace in the squad, perhaps on the wings. I believe that there's no good... I don't think we should break up the Jones and Marnie partnership in the midfield. And with the back, especially centre-backs, if we keep Keane, then just keep the same with Shaka and Keane. And if something bad happens, then me can step in. But, yeah, probably just some wingers, to be honest. I think that's probably our most... I think that's a position that I've seen us not be that effective in this year.
I think I'd certainly like to see us add some pace, whether that was a striker or a winger. I think that is a weakness in the squad. One name that did get linked, I don't know if there was anything in this, it sounded like he's going out on loan, they might need this sort of player, sort of link grass from thin air to me, but it was Joel Campbell at Arsenal, who had quite a good World Cup for Costa Rica, but hasn't really had a look in this season. It seems like he's going to go out on loan. James, what sort of players do you think we need to bring in? Do you think we're going to do a lot of business? There's probably not going to be a vast amount of money available to Dash.
Yeah, I think we're going to try and see what we can do. You know, there'll be some money, you know, and obviously not what a lot of other teams are willing to put about. But it might be a case of, you know, you look at who's not in favour elsewhere and see if you can pick up another couple of loans just to fill the squad out till the end of the season. Because I think Dash has got, you know, mainly what he wants. You'd say maybe if there's a certain position you want to improve, you'd maybe look at if you could get an upgraded winger. You know, maybe that's something you'd want. Maybe someone with a little bit more pace to play the other side from Boyd. Or maybe another midfielder to, you know, to inject a bit more pace into the centre of midfield.
I think midfield is the key area, I think. With Chalobah barely getting a game and Arfield being the only cover we've really got in there, and you can only really count Arfield as cover if he's not already playing. Like, you can't say he's going to be a central midfielder and a winger, he can't play them both at the same time. So I think we really need another body in there, whether we revisit someone like Henry Lansbury who we tried to get in the summer, or whether it's alone, it'll be quite interesting. But I'm sure they're working on it, and I'm sure we'll do the best we can. But I think there's a debate to be had over Dash's summer business. Actually, there's an article on the site this week about how well his summer arrivals have done. Obviously, it's difficult to judge him too harshly because of the amount of money he had spent, which was, let's remember, very small compared to a lot of other Premier League managers. But I think Sordell, you could probably say, is a flop. Bjukovic, probably a flop as well. Matt Taylor's barely played, Stephen Reid's barely played, Matt Giltz has barely played. It's been a mixed bag, I think it's fair to say. Liam, how do you assess the summer transfer business? George Boyd probably the only unqualified success from the new arrivals, is that fair to say?
I mean, we have made quite a lot than what I expected anyway at start. But yeah, I do believe that Chalobah has been kind of a flop. I was upset that he didn't really get that much game time. Reed and them lot, Reed, very kind of a surprise, to be honest. Didn't really expect to get Reed, especially for right back when we got Trips. I have been sort of upset about Matty Taylor as well, because I thought that he was he's got experience, played for West Ham. I didn't really like the look of him, especially as he does seem as a solid, in and out, consistent player. Kind of sad to see him pick up an injury. The strikers, since Window, we always said that we need a striker to partner with Ings, whatever, especially as Volks is out. With Duke and Sordell, I don't think they've both been really that good. Duke has been, he's good at what he's mainly good at, he's good at what he's doing, which is holding up the ball, etc. But yeah, Boyd's definitely, I've really got to like Boyd, especially as he is the player which we spent the most money on in the summer. I think it's it's not much of a surprise that as he is record standing for summer, which was only $3 million from Hull. I believe that it's been kind of sort of transfer window, not the greatest, but it could be much worse.
James, I know you're a big fan of George Boyd, but what do you make of the other new arrivals? I think Stephen Ward is one that was a success when he got into the team. It's just a shame that he's been out injured, but the rest have struggled to make an impact, really, haven't they?
Yeah, I think obviously George Boyd's been the clear one, who you'd say has been the success from the bunch. But I didn't think Djokovic was doing too bad until, you know, he got to the point where I think he just completely lost his confidence. He'd been playing a few good games, but he just wasn't getting that goal, and I think it's ultimately meant that, you know, he started to doubt himself more and more, and from there he's not really up for the games anymore, I don't think.
It weighs on your mind, doesn't it, as a striker, when you can't get off the mark?
Yeah, no doubt. And, there's a couple of the others who I think Stephen Reid was always there as sort of cover who can play pretty much anywhere. So it's maybe not surprising that we haven't seen a lot from him. And obviously, I think Matt Taylor's been unlucky with injury. Though again, you know, how much we would have seen of him if he hadn't got injured, it's impossible to say. And obviously, in the case of Matt Gilkes, he was always going to be the substitute keeper. So I think that's about what we expected from him.
It'll be interesting to see what sort of players Dash goes after this transfer window, because I think we've got quite a lot of experience in the squad now. I think we need to start planning ahead for a couple of positions. I think Kane would be really good for those reasons, because Duff's getting on and Shackle's not the youngest either. I think the two midfield lads are both about 30, aren't they? So we need to start thinking about possibly having replacements lined up for them. And up front, I think we need to think about what's going to happen when Danny Ings leaves the club, which I think we were all expecting to be in the summer rather than this month. But we need to have somebody lined up to come straight in, for me, because that's what we've done in the past. You can think like when Austin was sold, Ings was ready to step up, and before that, Austin came in when Rodriguez was sold, and Rodriguez stepped into the side when Fletcher was sold. We've had that preparation for the last few years, but don't think we've done that at the moment. So I'd really like to see us drop a couple of million at least, really, on someone who can fill Ings's boots next season, because I think it'll be a big shock if he's still playing for us. Liam, what's your assessment of the Ings situation? Everyone's saying that he's not leaving this month, but I suppose a big bid would still be tempting, wouldn't it?
I do believe that Ings won't really leave this month. I don't believe he will do that to us. I do believe that if he do stay up, that he probably would still leave next summer. That's probably just my prediction on that. But yeah, I understand what you're saying about you've always had at least a player behind, because when Charlie Austin went just before the Bolton game 2 seasons ago, we were all panicking, thinking, you know, who else is going to fill in? Danny Ings stepped up, Sam Vokes as well, as early before that season, he wasn't really particularly great, so that was kind of a shock. But you never know. I mean, it's kind of a weird thing to come up with, because when I've grown up, I've always seen the likes of back when we had like Andy Gray, Kyle Lafferty, and a lot. And I never really realised till now that we always had someone backed up. But I wouldn't really see someone like Jukovic or Marvin Sordell really filling in the boots. I've always seen Sordell as more of a League One sort of player. I don't know if that's an unfair prediction or not. But yeah, Ings, it's a weird thing. He hasn't been like exceptionally great, but I do believe he has been very good for the club, especially this season. So yeah, hoping for the best.
Yeah, I think if he was going to sign a new contract, he'd probably have already signed it by now, and fair play to him. If he keeps his options open, he can see what the lie of the land is in the summer, and he can probably get quite a large signing on fee, and his wages will be 2-3 times what we could afford to pay. So I don't begrudge him that, and as long as he gives 100% as he has all season, I think that's absolutely fine. That is about all we've got time for on this week's podcast. If you do have any feedback at all, please do get in touch. The email address is podcast@noneandever.net, and if you ever want to be a guest on the show, please do give us a shout as well. You can also tweet us. Our Twitter address handle thing is @noneandever.net, and we also need to thank our sponsors at Neville G, without whom we couldn't do the website or the podcast or anything like that. We'll round off then with a couple of predictions for the QPR game. James, are you going to be bold and go for a home win?
Yeah, I'll go for 2-0.
I think 2-0 sounds about right. What about you, Liam? Do you think it's going to be tighter than that?
I'm just going to stick with what I said earlier, and I believe it's going to be a 1-0 home win to Burnley.
Excellent. Well, hopefully we'll have 3 points and we'll have a win to talk about next week, but that's all we've got time for now. So thanks for joining us, and we'll be back the same time next week. Goodbye.